You're listening to KRCU, and I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Carlos Vargas. He's the president of Southeast Missouri State University. Dr. Vargas, welcome once again to the studio.
Thank you, Dan. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to see you, and we're glad you're here. And we want to talk about a few things that have been happening so far into the summer. At the very end of June, you sent us a note on campus that the governor was doing an additional withhold. And of course, we had budget cuts, and we may talk a little bit about that for FY18, an additional withhold. And what's the university going to do, and what's the plan going forward here as we get into this new fiscal year?
Sure. Well, yes, that is indeed true. You may remember there's been a series of events that have taken place starting in January of this year when we actually, first of all, before Governor Nixon actually left office, he actually had some withholdings for last year's fiscal year. Then as soon as Governor Greitens came in, he actually had additional withholdings. And then his budget for fiscal year 18, the proposal that he had, contemplated a cut of about 9% in our appropriations for higher education in general. After a series of conversations and the legislature looking at it, the legislature eventually ended up with a recommendation of 6.58 reduction. However, by that time, the university, we had already taken action on identifying and contemplating a 8.5% reduction in our budget. So we went through that exercise during the spring semester. Eventually ended up coming up with a plan, actually not a single-year plan, but actually a multi-year plan to absorb that cut. And so when the legislature proposed a 6.58 reduction in budget, we had the choice of either reducing our cut to 6.58 from 8.5 or keeping it at 8.5. We chose to keep it at 8.5 because we were not sure that the 6.58 was going to hold. And at that time, Governor Greitens had not signed the bill to make it the law. And so we went with that. And as it turns out, Governor Greitens did sign the bill for 6.58 reduction, but then immediately he announced withholdings, additional withholdings for higher ed, which essentially brought back the cut to a level of 9%. So because we had already developed a plan for the 8.5% cut, what we needed to do, and that's what we're in the process of doing, is identifying additional money. The additional amount is about $240,000. So we are right now in the process of identifying those funds. So we are going to end up, as it turns out, with a 9% budget cut.
Which is what the plan was, I guess, initially.
Which was initially
and
the
so
plan.
We sort of planned for most of that.
Yes. So fortunately, you know, we didn't have to go back to the drawing board and start from scratch. We had it already there. We had already had all kinds of conversations with the community of the campus and the three campuses and in the Boot Hill. And so at this point, we had already a plan going forward. As you may remember, one of the characteristics of the plan is that we did not have to eliminate any positions that were filled. So nobody really lost their job as a result of this this situation. You know, we do have people who leave and people who come in for other reasons. Some people resign, some people retire, and and some people are hired and all that. So that process goes on all the time, but we did not lose any field positions because of that. And so we are right now able to handle this, again, without having to lose field positions.
And, of course, some universities in the state have been making cuts to personnel. Mm-hmm. As of right now, from my understanding, that's going to be the last resort, I guess, for us. You've been saying publicly that that's something you don't want to do, right, at least here. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I've noticed that's going on is the voluntary retirement. So I guess there's going to be some sort of program for folks who are eligible to retire at the university to go ahead and take a retirement, which in long term would be some savings to personnel.
Right, and that's part of the plan that we developed. So we went to the Board of Regents this month at the last meeting that we had, and we proposed to them a voluntary retirement incentive plan, and they approved it. So we're going to put that plan into effect, and it's going to start. There's going to be a window during which people can apply, and that window is about 60 days from August 15 to October 13, I believe. And so people are going to be able to apply there. I don't know the exact number, but it's over 200 employees who are eligible to participate. Again, it's a voluntary thing, so if people want to do it, they can apply. And then the university is going to look at who we accept into the plan. The reason being that if for some reason in a unit, there are two or three people that want to retire at the same time, that might actually, create a problem with the operations of the unit. So we're looking into that right now. But that plan will be in place immediately. I think by the July 31st or so, we're supposed to put on the web, the packages, the information for people to start considering that. And this will give them, the window ends in October 13 or so, it does give the opportunity for faculty to return to the campus and then engage in conversations with maybe financial planners that they may have to decide whether this is something that they want to take advantage or not.
Okay. One of the things that was approved, I guess, for 18 is a tuition increase. And I'm just curious, do you think that's going to affect recruiting at all? Is there any concern about how a tuition increase will, affect future students coming to the university?
That's always a concern that I have. It's a concern that we should always have. I am not of the opinion that a tuition increase is small, so it shouldn't matter. To me, any increase in tuition is something that we need to be very careful with and very thoughtful about. And we should not go into increasing tuition unless we have an absolute identifiable need for that. In this particular case, given that we are receiving a 9% reduction in our appropriations, I think we had to do that. Are there students that may actually find it difficult to go to college with a tuition increase? I believe so. There will be some. We're trying to do as much as we can to, we have been putting in place scholarships to help students. So we have, right now, I think we have about almost 800 or so endowed scholarships that we offer to students in an effort to try to help them, deal with the we have 734 endowed scholarships, and 18 of those really were new in fiscal year 17.
Well, that was going to be my question. My sense is that those have been increasing. There's been more scholarships being added.
Yeah,
for students
we
to take
have
advantage
been working
of.
Very hard trying to do that. That's an effort that we're putting in place, and many of these scholarships are actually from private donors. So, people contribute some funds, and then we endow the scholarship, and so they can continue to be awarded on a permanent basis. That's something we're doing to try to help students. But of course, you want to encourage students to do well in school. I mean, that's an important aspect of that really reflects the degree to which student can be successful is to do as much as they can to do well in school.
The Supreme Court, as you know, recently let part of President Trump's travel ban go into effect. So one of the things I wondered about is could we see a decline in international students here at Southeast?
Well, we are already seeing that, and I would say there are multiple factors. For example, I will tell you that there are some countries that have traditionally supported their citizens going out to getting an education, many of them coming to the U.S. Saudi Arabia is an example just one that just comes to mind right now. And they, in some cases, have reduced the level of support internally that they have. So the number of students that go out to the world in general from Saudi Arabia comes down, and that affects us. So we have lost international students. That's just an example. So that's in some ways an unrelated reason for the decline. So we have had some losses. I'm not sure to what degree the travel ban in its present form is going to affect international enrollment. I have read actually some reports indicate that there's actually been an increase in some areas from some countries in terms of international applications. But I think it's early to tell what exactly is going to be happening. Certainly, the branding of the institution is very critical. If there are institutions that are well known abroad, and so those may be less affected than institutions that are not as well known. We are making, as you may remember, we are engaged in this internationalization laboratory initiative from the American Council on Education. We were accepted into that program, and we are at the end of the first year. And that program really essentially has to do with developing a strategic plan to make sure that we promote international activities on campus, including curriculum improvements, and also not only recruiting students, but actually sending students abroad. So study abroad is part of that initiative. So we are right now trying to make sure that we become an increasingly friendly institution that students from other countries can see as a friendly place to come to study. We are promoting our programs. We're making sure that we market them effectively. But at the same time, we're actually working with our own students here to give them the opportunity to go and study abroad. So we're working very hard on that, and I hope that that's going to, we're going to continue to improve or enhance our efforts to recruit international students. We're working in a variety of mechanisms that we have in place, in some cases with through agents, in some cases directly with institutions that we establish articulation agreements with. And I hope that what we have observed right now is not going to be a permanent situation, but that our enrollment at the international level will grow, because we have seen benefits from that. Our domestic students benefit from that opportunity. So.
Well, what makes me wonder is, if there are some countries that aren't going to, that are going to decrease their support or just decrease the number of students that are allowed to come, does that mean we have to shift our focus to the countries that are more willing to let students travel and kind of shift maybe who we're talking to?
Absolutely. That's exactly the right thing to do. So we're, as you know, we haven't really been very active in terms of recruiting students, for example, from Latin America. We don't have as many students from Central and South America. And so that's an area that I think we should be paying more attention to. And then some other countries, as you said, throughout the world, we need to keep monitoring where the opportunities come up and take advantage of them. Now, this actions are not actions that give you immediate results. So you need to establish the relationships. Excuse me. And that sometimes take a year or two. And so, but we need to be alert to that, and we need to work decisively on those areas.
I noticed in one of the, you sent an update out to all of us on campus about some things that happened in this past year, sort of a year in review. One of the things you noted was that athletics has launched the Red Hawks Bridge program. I didn't know much about that, and I wanted to ask you about what that program is about and what it's doing for student athletes here at Southeast Missouri State.
Very good. Of course, you know, that Bridge program is been put in place. It essentially obeys to the objective that we have, that is to help our student athletes be successful. We always talk to the student athletes and let them understand that they need to plan, and that you know, being in doing sports is great, and if they are able to do a career, develop a career by going into a professional sports, that's great. Very small number of students, student athletes actually go into professional sports. Recently, I was looking at the NCAA website, and overall, the number that I read there is that overall, there's no more than 5% of the total number of student athletes in all the sports that actually are eventually make it to professional sports. So it's not very large. So really, it is wise for students to really make sure that their studies are up to speed, that they continue to make efforts to do well in school, to have a so-called plan B, so that once they're no longer in sports, that they can actually, you know, get a career in a field that they enjoy. And so we are trying to develop this program that we talked about is a program to develop leadership and life skills, help the students really plan and make sure that they understand the importance that it has for them to do well in school. So we are really excited about that. And this program also allows us to integrate the student athletes more into the fabric of the institution. You know, there's always a challenge getting the rest of the student population to be supportive and to be very engaged with the student athletes. And so that's something that we're trying to do through this program.
Well, one of the things that you noted on your end of year sort of update was that student athletes achieved a 3.2 departmental GPA for the academic year, which is pretty good.
They do well. We have some things to learn from student athletes, absolutely. So, and those are important things to communicate to people that they do well. And so, of course, when you think about it, if you're a student athlete and you're in a team, there's a coach that's out there making sure that that coach wants to see you in the field. They want to see you play, so they don't want to find out that because of your grades, you're not eligible to play. And so they're very clear about the expectations that they have. So we work very closely with the coaches and athletic director. Brady Barkey really works closely with the coaches to make sure that we're all on the same page and we send a message that is consistent to the student athletes that they really should do well, because if they don't do well, they're letting their team down also. So there's quite a bit of pressure on the student athletes. And that's even not considering the fact that student athletes develop a series of skills that are very valuable. You know, time management is something that they really have to become very good at if they're successful. And those are the kinds of things that can be transferred over to the rest of the student population. So we do have a number of areas where student athletes can really be very instrumental in helping the rest of the student population improve their performance.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about is the eclipse. Of course, there's been a lot of talk about it, and it's almost here. So what I want to talk about with you specifically is let's kind of tell folks what the university is doing related to it and how just the broader community can even get involved and come learn more and participate in some of the events that are being held on campus.
Yes, we're excited about that. I think, interestingly, I am glad that we really got into this kind of activity and that we started planning early enough. Even when we started planning, I felt that we were a little bit late, but having said that, we're moving along well. The level of enthusiasm that I observe is really growing tremendously. Now you're hearing people in the community talk about that. As a matter of fact, I was in a meeting of the Chamber of Commerce the other day, and one of the members, one of the businesses, actually said that they were planning on taking time because it's going to take place close to the lunchtime. It's after 1 o'clock or so. They're going to actually take that opportunity to have a picnic kind of thing in the company. So they're going to encourage people to come out and take time, and they're going to give them some of those glasses to be able to see. You should not look at the eclipse at the sun without some protection. And so I think the community in general and the businesses are starting to get interested in it. The university, we are doing something really exciting. We are bringing here a very well-known scientist. He's a physicist from the City University of New York that has been in the news quite a bit. He's been shown on TV. He has a number of books that he's written. Some books are for just the general public, and of course he does have some expertise in the physical. He's a theoretical physicist. Michio Kaku, K-A-K-U, he is the name. That's the name of the individual. He's going to come, and he's going to be giving a presentation at the end of the day on August 21st, and that's going to be the first lecture in our lecture series that the university has every year. So that evening, and right now you can get tickets free.
There's free ticket, that's right.
Yeah, so that's I encourage anybody who is interested in attending that lecture to actually get their tickets at this point. Now, of course, the ticket is not that expensive. It's $10. So if they buy the ticket, that's very good because, those funds go to create scholarships actually for students. So that's very useful. Now, we're also going to have an astrophysicist from Pennsylvania who is going to be here, Dr. Philip Reed. He is going to be visiting us. He's going to bring with him a couple of solar telescopes. These are telescopes specifically designed to be able to see the sun. And he's going to be here. I think at this point we're scheduling a lecture by him on Sunday, so the day before.
Day before, okay.
Sunday afternoon for the public and students from the university. And he is actually well-known and interestingly, he is actually a co-author in a very recent article in Nature magazine. Nature is a well-known scientific magazine, and to be published in an article there is quite an accomplishment. So he does a lot of observations in a telescope at the university where he is at. And so he's going to be somebody worth listening to.
So a lot of things, and I would just note to your listener, if you're listening right now, that to find out more about all of these activities, eclipse.cmo.edu is the website, mm-hmm. and all of this information is there.
Yes.
And I believe the university is going to be closed and offices closed, no classes from what, noon to 2, I guess, on that
That's
day,
correct.
I think?
That's correct. Yeah, we thought that it was, considering it was the first day of classes, lots of activities going on, we're going to have normal, I think we're going to close normal street in front of the UC and the library and in front of Academic Hall, because there's all kinds of things going on at that point, and we want to take this opportunity to promote an environment of sort of welcoming institution for the new students that are coming in. So we're going to be doing that from 12 to 2. There's going to be no classes, and most offices are going to be invited to actually come out and take the opportunity. We're going to have a lot of activities on Hauk Stadium. There's going to be a launching of a couple of hot air balloons. These are not with people. I mean, these are...
Yeah, no rides.
No rides. This is just balloons that are going to carry experiments. These are one of our recent alumni actually is working for NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and she helped us through the College of Education. We got actually Dean Diana Rogers Atkinson was able to get a grant to invite schools, K-12 schools, to come and witness the launching of the balloon. So it's really very nice, very exciting.
So a lot of activities. And again, eclipse.cmo.edu is the place to go to find out all about the eclipse events happening here at Southeast Missouri State. Dr. Vargas, we run out of time, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to come by and talk with us today.
Thank you. This was very enjoyable, increasingly enjoyable.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.